Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. And today, we're having, as our guest, is Stephen Katz. He's the state chair with the Socialist Party USA there in New York. And Stephen Katz is joining us today to discuss, where we're going to have a discussion on the 50th year anniversary since the assassination of JFK, John F. Kennedy. So, and the name of our program today is John F. Kennedy, 50 Years and Still in the Dark. So, Stephen, thanks for joining the program today.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure to be with you, Stuart, and to, you know, discuss these issues.
Now, Stephen, we're going to get into a lot of things. This has created a lot of discussion on the Internet. Very interesting topic. Some things that you mentioned, you say you wanted to bring some things up that was going to be reveal some new things in regards to the assassination. I didn't post it because I wasn't certain what you were going to reveal, but we can discuss that today. But
yes.
Stephen, it's been 50 years since the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and I can vividly remember that day. And there were many people that were there on the scene, and the whole nation watched this right there on television. It was probably the one most incidental moment in the history of this country where people could see something to the magnitude of an assassination, and then they saw all the events unraveling right there in front of them on television. We had never seen anything like this. We had had wars and other things, but here we were watching this event on television. First of all, I want to ask you, what do you remember about that day, November 22nd in 1963, Stephen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we all, those of us who were alive and old enough to know what went on, everybody has, you know, their own particular memory of it. I was just about 15 years old, and I was in Tilden High School in Brooklyn, which Brooklynites know very well. I was sitting in class, and there was a quadrangle outside of the window of the class, and we saw the flag being lowered, and there was an announcement over the loudspeaker, and they told everybody to go home, because nobody knew whether this was the beginning of a war or what was going on. So, obviously...
And very interesting, the same thing happened to me.
Uh-huh.
The same thing happened. I was in school, and they, you know, classes were, you know, they said everyone needed to come inside. They didn't know if we were going to war. The president has just been killed. And everyone was, all the instructors were crying, men and women. But anyway, what else do you remember about that day?
Well, I mean, I remember going home, and then, of course, you know, the famous Walter Cronkite sequence was played, and, you know, where he announced that the president had passed away. And, you know, and then, of course, there was news about Lyndon Johnson taking the oath. And at that point in time, there was virtually nothing about Oswald or anybody else. It was only that later on that it came out that, you know, a person called Oswald had been apprehended.
Right, exactly.
So, and... Now, I remember also, I don't know whether it was that day or the following day, but I remember my father coming home, and he said right away, they got him. Not Oswald shot him, or not an individual, but they got him. And my father grew up in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn, which was very tough even in the 30s, and... he worked in stores in Bed-Stuy and so on and so forth, and they knew all the local mobsters at that time. And,
right.
You know, he seemed to be indicating through the grapevine that this was something that was had been planned or was organized in some way. And, you know, he didn't go into it any further. And, you know, but it was very interesting to me that he said that because, you know, I hadn't thought anything about that, you know. And they were reporting one person did it, you know, and he said right away they got
him. Right.
So, you know, that's a piece of information where, unfortunately, he passed away a number of years ago. And I did ask him a couple of questions about him. And he said he heard people in the hangouts, which were mob hangouts in Brooklyn, that he had, you know, he had overheard conversations. So this is certainly anecdotal, and it's a personal information that has never been reported before today.
Right.
And I can't assess it other than to report it. But that started me thinking at a very, very early stage, even before Oswald was killed. And, you know, and of course, when he was killed, I was in the car with my father, and we had the radio on, and some people saw it on TV, but we heard it coming over the radio. So, you know, that was, you know, sort of the introduction to the whole thing.
Right.
For
Stephen,
me,
one of the things I wanted to get into, we're going to get a little bit more into various conspiracies because there are a lot of conspiracies. There have been reports to basically to deal with many of those conspiracy theories that are out there.
Right.
But one of the things that you have charged in regards to this 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, you have charged that the media, that there is a complete media blackout of the Kennedy assassination. Yet what I have seen, I have seen a plenty of media coverage on television for the last 2 weeks. I mean, I get home at night and my wife is saying, you need to watch this because your program is coming up. And then I see, you know, I'd be going through various channels with her, and next thing you know, she'd say, oh, there's something else from the assassination. Maybe you need to watch that. But, Stephen, when you say a media blackout,
up until the last 2 weeks, there has been pretty much of a blackout. And other than this Nova thing, which is a whitewash, I don't know what has been reported. I bought a copy of Life magazine, which only comes out now occasionally. As you know, when we were kids growing up, Life magazine was a big photo magazine, and people bought it quite regularly. And there again, you know, it's almost like a complete reiteration of the whole Warren Commission, which has been discredited, roundly discredited, by many different sources. And as I've said, there was one judicial proceeding, and there was one congressional proceeding. And in those proceedings, there are usually fairly rigorous standards of evidence, and there are lawyers and judges and former judges involved, and many investigators. And in both those instances, both in the trial of Clay Shaw, which was prosecuted by Jim Garrison, and the House Select Committee on Assassinations, both those bodies found that there was a conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
And that the Warren Commission had very serious deficiencies. On top of that, there have been many serious studies done, and a lot of recent photo analysis and analysis of the Zapruder film. And Zapruder was not the only individual taking pictures there. There were at least a dozen other people in the Grassy Knoll area and a few back by the book depository taking all kinds of pictures. And they've been using much more sophisticated techniques to analyze what's actually in the pictures. And there have been a number of analyses that show that there is activity in the grassy knoll behind the picket fence and also behind the monument. And the witnesses were interviewed, and this did not really get much play in the Warren Commission at all. They suppressed it, but there were several people who said they saw gunfire from behind the picket fence and smoke. And there were a few people there who, one of whom was an Army guy who felt the bullet whiz past him from the stockade area, which was, of course, you know, right in front of the limousine, and probably was the fatal shot that hit President Kennedy in the head. And this was a military man who was knowledgeable, right, about firearms. And a number of the people in the area, and you know, you're in Texas, so you know, an old girlfriend of mine came from Texas, and
Who's in Texas?
Well, of course, the assassination took place in Texas, but you know,
I thought you're in Texas. I'm in California.
No, I'm not in Texas, but a former girlfriend of mine grew up in Texas, and she's talked to me quite a lot about it, and I know, although I was only there once, I know that there's a tremendous number of firearms down there, and people are very knowledgeable, and, you know, it's unlike it is in certain cities like here where, you know, it's highly restricted. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the way they sound, the way gunpowder smells, and all of that stuff, and you had those people down at the grassy knoll, and they said that there was gunfire from behind the picket fence. One guy was on the bridge overlooking it, said he saw somebody fire a rifle, take the rifle and disassemble it, put it in a rifle carrying case, go into a car which was in the rail yard, and take off with somebody else. And this is an amalgamation of many, many documentaries and much investigation. Now, the other very significant thing, which came out very early, a guy named Joshua Royce, who was an independent investigator, actually publicized this way back in 1967, which was, you know, not too many years afterwards, that Governor Conley, to the day he died, swore that he was not hit by the same bullet that Kennedy was hit by. It was a second shot that hit him, and if he was hit by a second shot, there wouldn't have been enough time for Oswald to reload and get two shots off so quickly in a bolt-action rifle. Now,
well, the thing is, what I understand from much of the reading that I've done, there was a shot fired. Conley turned to see where the shot had come from,
right?
And while he was turning, I believe at the same time, there were witnesses, including many of the security personnel, could see that the president, after the first shot, he was grabbing at his, he had lowered his hands to grab whether it's his throat or whatever it was. And then while the governor was looking, then there was another shot that was fired, and then he had mentioned that they were trying to kill us, you know. So,
exactly, and the point is, too, that the bullet...
So it wasn't that
is,
first shot.
It wasn't the first shot. And Conley, who was a hunter himself, and also ex-military, he swore to the day he died that, and his wife, incidentally, as well, but Conley in particular swore, because the bullet goes faster than the speed of sound. Time that he already heard that shot had already gone into Kennedy and done its damage. Then there was a second shot rapidly right thereafter, which was too close in time. Many people reported these two shots very close in time, and that bolt-action rifle was not capable of getting off two rounds in that degree of time. Now, there are automatic weapons, and there were automatic weapons back then that could have done that, but Oswald didn't have it, or that whoever was up there or whoever left that rifle there, that rifle was not capable of getting off two shots in that particular time frame.
Right.
So already you have a problem in the terms of, you know, you have to have two shooters. There has to be a second rifle, wherever it came from. And so that was another major thing. And most of the observers, almost all the observers in the Grassy Knoll area said it came from the Grassy Knoll area. In fact, if you look at the films and the still photography, everybody immediately ran up into the Grassy Knoll area to try to get whoever was there and who had
been
the shooting, because they thought, you know, let's get this guy. There's somebody up there. Someone is doing, you know, nobody turned around and ran towards the depository.
Right.
Now,
saying that there were possibly another shooter on top of the depository instead of inside the building, but they sent Oswald, I think he was on whatever floor he was on, and then they can say that from another angle, they believe that there was a shooter on top. So they're trying to say it was two shooters. But, I want to get into this right here, and I'm just reading this from Wikipedia. Say, in contrast to the conclusion of the Warren Commission, the United States House Select Committee on Assassinations, HSCA, concluded in 1978 that Kennedy was probably assassinated as a result of conspiracy. The HSCA found the original FBI investigation and the Warren Commission report to be seriously flawed. Agreeing with the commission that Oswald fired all the shots which caused the wounds to Kennedy and Connally, the HSCA stated that there were at least four shots fired, only three of which could be linked to Oswald, and there was a high probability that two gunmen fired at the president.
Right.
Now, you know, and there are many other similar reports that are coming out that there was shots fired from the same direction or possibly even two gunmen. But now you're having another government body that is saying that the Warren Commission was seriously flawed. And even the people that were on the commission, they had doubts about the report that they were putting out. The people that were on the Warren Commission, you know, that were commissioned to do this report, these findings, they were very hesitant about doing that because they thought that the credibility of it would be challenged, which it is today.
Well, I mean, you know, this is the Socialist Insight program, so, you know, I want to take a view to a broader social and political view of the forces behind this. And the government, of course, at that time, they were concerned about panic, and they were concerned about the idea that if it turned out that there was evidence of a conspiracy, it would have prolonged the investigation, and if, in fact, that they uncovered such a conspiracy, and they had plenty of indications that there was something there, that means some type of coup had taken place or some type of transfer of power on an organized basis rather than one emotionally unstable individual, which everybody could more or less write off and not feel, you know, unduly personally insecure that, you know, every once in a century some crazy guy does something like this, you know, like John Wilkes Booth and, you know, that guy that I think it wasn't Warren Harding. It was McKinley, I believe. McKinley was shot when Teddy Roosevelt was the vice president. But but the broader thing is, I really go back to, you know, there is a remark that, in a sense, there's been so many different theories that it's operated against the credibility of some of the theories. And I think that having examined this as much of the research as I could, it seems to make the best sense that this was linked to Cuba. And I will go back, too, to that last address by Eisenhower where he said, beware, in January of 1961, right before he left office, he said, beware of a new military-industrial complex taking control of the United States and affecting us spiritually, morally, militarily, and politically, and so on and so on. Now, what I think happened is the following, and I think most of the evidence seems to point to the fact that Kennedy was killed by a professional military assassination team in which Oswald may have simply been used as a decoy guy just to hang around the periphery.
Now, let me ask you, is there any proof of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think there is some proof of it. And the idea is that you have to put it in context. First of all, you had the Bay of Pigs invasion. Now, the Bay of Pigs invasion failed, and the people who were behind the Bay of Pigs invasion, including the CIA and the exile Cuban force that had assembled to retake the island, blamed Kennedy for not following up and giving them air support and so on. So when they landed there in the Bay of Pigs, the Cuban revolutionary forces were, you know, very easily able to disarm them and to capture them, and you know that created a lot of consternation. And then secondly, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was a lot of pressure on Kennedy to invade the island, and of course these forces that wanted to retake the island were, you know, most anxious that here finally was a tremendous reason to do it. I mean, nuclear weapons, what better reason could you have? And Kennedy sought a negotiated way out, but in the negotiations he had to promise Khrushchev that he would not invade the island, and Khrushchev, in exchange for that, Khrushchev removed the missiles from the island, and you know, there was some kind of token gesture on Kennedy's part to take a few missiles out of Turkey. But the main thing was that Kennedy de facto was not going to do anything about Castro. That was number one.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, he was already talking in the fall of 1963 in September. He was interviewed by Walter Cronkite, I believe.
Right.
It was either Brinkley or Cronkite. I believe it was Cronkite. He was interviewed in Hyannisport, where their family had a summer home, and he said, "Look," he said, "it's you know, it's their war over in Vietnam, and you know, we sent some advisors there, but you know, if they can't do any better than they're doing now, you know, I am going to withdraw our forces." And in fact, he had signed an executive order with the goal of getting all U.S. forces out of Vietnam by the end of 1965.
Right.
And he had also made a speech at an American university. This is all directly right before the assassination, about disarmament talks with the Soviets and peace and so on and so forth. So what I think is that you have these entrenched military elements, the contractors, the weapons manufacturers, the virulent anti-communists, and so on and so forth. And out of this sort of witch's brew of forces, this professional assassination team was sent down there and killed him. Now, I think this...
Well, the thing what I'm looking at, Steve, I mean, you know, we can theorize all of these things, but I mean, how do you come up with concrete proof? I mean, to say that here's something of substance to prove exactly what I'm saying, because I've been hearing all these things over the years, over the last 25, 30 years, that Johnson, you know, he wanted. And Johnson's another part of the theory that he wanted Kennedy out because he wanted to become the 35th president. You know, he was he was a favorite son of the Democrats, and the whole Kennedy family disliked. I've heard all of these things, but with concrete proof?
Well, the proof is really, I mean, unfortunately, I think theories like that about Johnson tend to discredit all theories. And that's why, you know, those theories are, you know, so destructive, because they take credibility and focus off the few theories that do have evidence and that, you know, should be pursued and that have some basis in fact. Now, you know, the way these professional teams work, and it's the same thing with the mafia, nobody
right.
ever found Jimmy Hoffa's body.
Right.
Nobody knows how he – every couple of years a book is published and they say this is what happened, because these people are professionals, and it's the same with the military. Now, they wanted to get rid of Castro, and what I believe is they were training in Miami, and I believe that they already had such a team together, but they turned it against Kennedy when they felt betrayed by Kennedy, and they probably hoped that they would get maybe a different deal from Johnson. Well, Johnson didn't alter the policy on Cuba. Johnson did
right.
alter the – Johnson did go in another direction from the direction
from
of Kennedy's – yeah, I mean, we don't know what would happen because Kennedy didn't live, but it certainly
right.
seems clear that Kennedy had some very different ideas than Johnson had about what to do about Vietnam.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, that's concrete proof that, you know, we could see the direction that Kennedy was going in regards to Vietnam. We
right.
see that Johnson went an about-face, and where Kennedy was saying, I'm not going to commit the U.S. forces to a war, even advisors. I'm looking at, you know, where we're going to pull away from this. Johnson jumped in it head-on. So it was, you know, that. Now we can see that, that was for a fact that Johnson thought it was a winnable war. Kennedy thought it was something that we shouldn't get involved in. And when you start linking the military-industrial complex, I mean, I can't say for certain that the military-industrial complex and the leaders in that were behind the assassination, but it gives you a lot of food for thought. But let's face it, that's what conspiracies always do. They just give you food
right.
for thought. But it's no concrete proof.
All we can do is, because of the nature of what happened, and because the people who did it were professional people who when they do this, they make it extremely difficult to put the proof together. What we
right.
have to do is take what hard proof exists, and then we have to use inference and speculation. It's not possible at this stage, and it wasn't possible probably very shortly thereafter, maybe after 2 or 3 years, to secure the necessary evidence while it was still hot, because I think the evidence shows there was more than one shooter. Now, we know that there's a whole history of Oswald. He seemed to be some kind of double agent. He seemed to have been involved both with anti-Castro Cubans and pro-Castro Cubans, and he was sent to Russia. He came back from Russia, and, you know, a lot of this has gone into with Jim Maris's book, Crossfire, and there's a few other books. There's also one book that I would really to mention in support of the military-industrial complex conspiracy theory, which does give direct testimony. And that book was written by Fletcher Prouty.
Mm-hmm.
And Fletcher Prouty was a top CIA Army intelligence officer during this entire period of the late 50s through the mid-60s when he retired. He wrote a book, and it was published in 2011, in which he goes through some of which I've discussed here, and which he goes into much more detail about how these elements were plotting against Kennedy, and how much animosity Kennedy had elicited from them, and you know that they definitely did want to get rid of him.
Steve, I'm just going to take a quick. Yeah, I'll go and finish, and then I'm going to just take a quick break to announce you as our guest today.
And let me just get up here to my bookcase, because this book, I think I may have mentioned this in a prior show, but the book is available in Barnes & Noble's right now. The book is called JFK, The CIA, Vietnam, and the Plot to Assassinate John F. Kennedy. It's Fletcher Prouty, P-R-U-T-Y, and it was published in 2011, and there were copies at your local Barnes & Nobles. I picked this up about a month ago. And there is Prouty's narrative in there constitutes testimony, and testimony is evidence. So I would urge people to read that book and read some of the other books that I've mentioned, and you have to start putting together a mosaic. But he was somebody who was highly placed, and he was somebody in a position to know. He wasn't some, you know, crackpot theorist who, you know, is out there just who sees conspiracies all over the place. This guy has commendations from all kinds of military people, from intelligence people. He was very highly decorated. He's extremely credible from the standpoint of somebody who would not be going off the deep end.
Well, Stephen, I'm just going to announce very briefly, we do have Stephen Katz. He's joining us once again on the Socialist Insight. And today we're discussing JFK 50 years and still in the dark. And Stephen Katz, he is the state chair for the Socialist Party USA. He's also an attorney at law. He's been in the socialist movement for the majority of his life. And Stephen, thanks again for joining the program.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Stephen, I'm going to get into a few quick things because I still have a lot to cover on this. This is a big subject, and one I'm glad to have you on the program to engage me in discussion on. Steve, obviously we've been talking about many of the conspiracies out there. Let me ask you, Stephen.
Yes.
Point blank, was there a political cover-up of this assassination?
No question in my mind, and I think many, many people, and the vast majority that have looked into it and examined it, see that the Warren Commission was a rushed cover-up. And that in any investigation, you have to start out with an open mind and pursue every lead possible before you come to a conclusion.
And they didn't do that.
No, what they did is they had a preconceived idea of what they wanted the investigation to find, and then they took from the evidence what supported that viewpoint. The unfortunate thing is, if Oswald hadn't been killed by Jack Ruby and there had been a trial, and this is why it gets even more suspicious, Oswald's defense attorney certainly would have gone into all of this, and they didn't want that to happen.
Right.
So the best way of covering the whole thing up would be to get rid of Oswald, because Oswald was the link. Oswald could have given a lot of testimony, and Oswald's attorney, and probably he would have had a team of attorneys, they would have turned over every rock, and that would have brought out everything. And, you know, so the fact that he was killed contributed tremendously to the subsequent cover-up that occurred.
Obviously, one of the questions I have, which you've already covered, obviously you don't believe in the single bullet theory. Do you think it was more than two shooters?
I think there were at least two, maybe three. There was at least one from the Grassy Knoll area. There might have been one from one of the buildings on the other side of the plaza, not the book depository, but I think there was two buildings. There was a criminal courts building, and there was some other building there, some commercial building. But at any rate, I believe there was at least two shooters.
Yeah, much of what is coming out, they believe that there was two shooters from the depository, and they believe that it was one from the Grassy Knoll. Now, you know, people say they heard shots back there, and as you mentioned, there was a lot of witnesses out there that had seen this, and many of those witnesses, well over two-thirds of the witnesses, they never even presented any of the statements that were made to the authorities at the time.
No, and
do you
the
think
thing,
also that
yeah.
Yeah. The other thing what? No, please.
Okay. You can ask the question.
Also, what took place when I'm talking about a political cover-up, do you think the autopsy and everything that took place through that, do you think that it was deliberately botched? because, I mean, they had people that basically the follow-through on the autopsy and all the other things that they did in regards to the investigation, interviewing witnesses and everything, they say it was serious flaws in this whole investigation. And you would think that the federal government, the FBI, would have been on top of that investigation, especially when you're talking about the President of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, there's another book called High Treason, and one of the co-authors is a photographic expert. And there's also a lot of forensic evidence and pictures of the autopsy in the book. Apparently, the two pathologists that did the Kennedy autopsy were not forensic pathologists. They were Navy people, and they were pressed into service in order to do it, but they were not experienced, and they were directed as to what to do. And apparently, the autopsy was done in such a way as to make it look as if Kennedy was hit from behind, and they altered the way he appeared, and they altered the appearance of the wounds, and so on and so forth. The other very mysterious thing is Kennedy's brain disappeared, and the brain, of course, could be examined and, shed a lot of light on the track of the bullet, where it entered, where it exited, and the fact that something like that could happen is just astounding. I mean, a common ordinary forensic pathologist in any major city would have done a much, much better job on it. And if any of them had botched it like this, they would have been fired. I mean, when I was in law school, I had a fellow, Dr. Michael Baden, who was was the medical examiner in New York City for a long time. And, he certainly would not have accepted these findings. And also Cyril Wecht, who's a very famous guy, has discussed at length the autopsy and the autopsy findings. And there's too many irregularities there. So the autopsies, was altered apparently, and this is what I'm saying, the evidence was arranged to prove a prearranged conclusion,
right.
We know that any kind of sound investigation, goes just the opposite. The people keep an open mind, examine all the evidence, and then only later on, when the evidence starts to speak to you and you can see patterns, do you start making speculations and start logically putting things together? But if you're going to have a conclusion, it reverses the whole thing. I mean, why have a trial or why have an investigation if you already know what you want to find and you're only going to pick out the evidence that supports it, which is what the Warren Commission did?
Well, one of the things is over the years, Steve, I have seen lots of films and tapes regarding the Kennedy assassination.
And right.
Over the years, we were being led to believe not to believe what we see.
Right, right.
And I sort of take offense when you tell me I see something, and that's not exactly what you saw. Rodney King, he got the crap beat out of him on the streets of Los Angeles. And, it was a savage beating, yet we were told, it's not exactly what you saw. Well, the whole world saw it. I mean, you have a billion people see something and say, that's not exactly what you saw, And then we see two planes fly into a building and to the Twin Towers, and unfortunately, 3,000 people lost their lives. But then we're told not to believe what is happening, what we have seen, of this tragic event,
right.
And then, here's another building, Building 7, and, people say, these are part of conspiracy theories also. Building 7 collapsed. We see other explosions take place with the building. And they say, it's not exactly what you're seeing. What happened there, I saw things that took place in 1963. You saw it. The whole nation was watching this. And they said, well, it's not exactly that way, but here's a report to tell you what happened. And then we have this with 9/11, September 11, 2001. That's not exactly what happened. Let's tell you what happened, and then we go into another war. Then it was Vietnam. 58,000 people lost, American soldiers lost their lives. Now here it is. We're wrapped up in two wars, and both wars, the military-industrial complex is making, you know, hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars, you see. But Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to believe in theories, but I'm, you know, investigations that are botched and things that are happening that we can see as citizens, as people watching television, people that have eyes, don't tell me what I'm looking at, you know, like it's a single bullet and I see certain things on tape. You tell me that there's two planes, but I see other things that are happening. I start questioning the authorities that's presenting this information to me. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, I mean, it calls to mind an old saying of Groucho Marx, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? I mean, obviously we have to trust our own senses and our own thoughts and our own logic above all. And that's really a lesson that... I think Orwell really was trying to teach in his work that use your own mind, use your own senses to come to conclusions, because the authorities and those who have vested power interests are always going to spin the truth to support their interests.
Right, and that's what's happening. It seems like we are skewing the truth to be able to, you know, support certain interests out there. And even, you know, this is something that Ruth Ann, a very good friend and also the sponsor of this program,
right.
He has posted out there quite a bit about what happened with the Pentagon. You know, here's a plane flies in the building. I mean, I should see a little bit of evidence of something that if it was a plane, but all of a sudden I don't see this. You know, now you're starting to say, well, don't believe in theories. Conspiracies. I just want to believe in believe in reality. If something happens, you need to explain facts to me. Don't try to say that, you know, these are facts that happened, but we want you to believe it this way. I do feel myself I need to challenge that. So even though it's a lot of conspiracies and can't really prove those conspiracies, I start questioning the government. What are we hiding in all of these things? When we're continuously going into one war after another war, and tens of thousands of people are dying, and in other countries millions of people are dying as a result of things that are not, you know, where we're not getting the facts, where we have a government that's covering up. So when I was asking you a few minutes ago that you believe it's a political cover-up, it sounded like there's a cover-up in there somewhere to me.
I didn't catch your last words to it. There was a cover-up.
No, it seems like it's the cover-up somewhere, but what I was thumbing through my notes, because what I want to do is one of the persons, when I posted some information out there, he was saying, you know, he support a lot. I won't mention his name on the air because he hasn't given authorization to do this, but what he was saying is why is that conspiracy theories about JFK continue to branch further and further apart? It was mob. No, it was Castro. No, it was the CIA. No, it was you think that if conspiracy theories about Kennedy was true, that eventually some of these would fade into the background and the real story would emerge. And then he just went on. I mean, but no, after 50 years of official single bullet theory is defended by a majority of historians and scientists, and those who cry foul can never get their case off the ground. The only time it was tried, literally, by Jim Garrison, it was widely rejected. Now, you probably read this same thing. Now, what he had done is he had put some information about Nova, and they again, gave some coverage on that. He'd say, whitewash and cover up by Nova, ? Where, when, what part of the documentary do you disagree with? Did you remember reading, did you read that also, Stephen?
Yeah, not only did I read it, but I actually watched
it.
It was
a total blast.
Right. No, I watched the Nova segment, and as I said, I'll say it again, there have been literally about 1,000 volumes published about the assassination, the vast majority of which have cast doubt on the not only the single bullet theory, but the whole credibility of the Warren Commission. And while at this date we still don't have all the facts, it seems to me we do have enough to be able to say that there was a conspiracy. And in looking at the forces loose at that time, and unfortunately they still are loose at present, those people who had the strongest means, opportunity, and motive to do this, and by doing this to hopefully change, you know, American policy towards Cuba, and to allow a much greater production of weapons, because Kennedy was going to cut back on that, because, you know, without a Vietnam War, you don't need all those weapons, the bombers, the helicopters, and all this other stuff that they had produced. And you're talking about very, very big money here. You're not talking about,
right.
You know, and you're talking about billions of dollars. And he was seen as an impediment against this. And he was seen as an impediment against a very more aggressive policy against the Soviet Union in Cuba, in Asia, and in other places. And so, I happen to believe that we haven't heard the last on this, even though many of the original witnesses have died, some under mysterious circumstances, I still believe it's possible for new evidence to come out. I still believe that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the One of the things, what?
I don't know if we'll still be around. But it's still possible, even in the future, even in maybe 20, 30 years, or there's still documents that have not been examined. I mean, you know, there's still stuff that, I mean, it is a fact that Jim Garrison subpoenaed the IRS records of Oswald to try to find out who paid him when he was in the military and what he was doing, and they couldn't get it. And what they did get was completely blacked out. Now, why would they do that? If Oswald was a nobody, you know, so-called nobody, low-level military guy, what did they have to black anything out? They paid him the regular rate that they pay sergeants or corporals or whatever who are radar operators or whatever.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of suspicious stuff, you know, and we don't have all the facts yet, but I do believe that there's still some possibility that in the future there will be more that will come out and that will substantiate one of these theories. I consider it proved that there was a conspiracy. I consider it proved that there was more than one gunman. And I consider it proved that there were, you know, most likely groups behind this type of conspiracy who wanted to see Kennedy out of the way, hoping to change American policy in certain areas, both for financial reasons and also for ideological reasons.
Well, what I wanted to speak about just a little bit before we finish our show, and I'd just like for you to get some contact information for yourself in around seven or eight minutes here. You know of Naomi Klein, and she talks quite a bit as a scholar. She's also written books on the shock doctrine.
Right, right.
And when you understand where that's coming from,
right.
The U.S. had come out of World War II. We had just come recently and ended the war with the Korean War. And
right.
Americans basically they were getting war fatigue. Here we were still had an occupation that was going on in Korea, and the U.S. was, you know, people here were saying, you know, we're tired of these wars. They were already tired of Korea, and now we're here, even Kennedy was saying, no, you know, he could feel the pulse of the nation. Even Eisenhower was saying, talking about the military-industrial complex, you could see that Kennedy, you know, he was saying this is the wrong direction to go. And even Eisenhower was telling the president that he should try to avoid being involved in another conflict such as Vietnam. We can see in 1965, 64 and 65, Lyndon Johnson got us involved in that war. But when you understand the shock doctrine, I mean, first, a president is assassinated. The whole nation in 64, they were still reeling. They were reeling in shock behind this for almost a year. I mean, it was not only during the Warren Commission, but people were still trying to comprehend that a very likable president had been assassinated right before their eyes. I mean, here you do it right on national television.
Right.
So when you look at things such as the shock doctrine, and then we go into another war, which was Vietnam, the shock doctrine, which shock and awe that Bush was talking about, and then we go and we invade, first of all, you have the Twin Towers, and then next thing you know, before they even have any proof or any concrete findings, we're going into another war with Iraq because they say, look, the Twin Towers, now we need to go to war with this guy and the whole world, including the U.S.
Right.
Well, we don't have any findings that show that, concrete findings that he have weapons of mass destruction. After we were already involved there, then even the president himself, Bush, said, no, we were wrong. It wasn't no weapons of mass destruction. So it was a cover-up and a lie, but it took us into another war. But I just want you to comment a little bit about using, and, you know, when the government, when you're making one mistake after another, whether it's intentional or non-intentional, you know, and is working on the fears of people, Stephen, it seemed like that shock and awe doctrine that the capitalists used to keep the military-industrial complex going. Could you just talk about what shock and awe is all about?
Well, I mean,
and then I
you
want
know,
your last words on the assassination.
Yeah, well,
of
I mean,
Kennedy.
obviously, in order for this massive military machine to continue to roll on, there have to be enemies. And there has to be the mobilization of the population, putting the population under constant fear, and you know, this is what is this has been going on for many, many years, and so all we see is a continuation. Now Obama and the Congress in general, you know, because of the sequester, they are defunding some of the military stuff. But, you know, this has been the major thrust of U.S. policy since Vietnam. That's why I almost think that the Kennedy assassination was a coup, putting in permanent power the military-industrial interests, the corporate military-industrial and financial interests in a position of permanent control over the United States state. And regardless of who's president, you know, controlling the matters. And I believe one of the reasons that Obama has not been able to do as much as he's wanted to do is he's under the control of these forces. And
without a doubt.
Yeah, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And It would be extremely difficult for anybody to deal with
that. Well, let's face it, Stephen. Obama is employed as the CEO. He's employed. He's an employee. You know.
He's an employee. I actually almost view him more as a public relations officer than as a CEO. I actually view him as as somebody who can sell these policies.
In other words, he doesn't have any real power.
No, I don't think so.
Right.
I really don't think so. I think what power he does have is very limited, and I think he's given options, but those options are already preset. I don't think he has much leeway at all. You know?
And I have another minute and one half. I would like for you to give the last word on this 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK, and then I'd like to give you contact information. Could you do that for me, please?
Yes. My final comment is that, the course of not only American history, but world history was changed by the assassination, and that people should continue to look into it. And I hope that eventually, if not now, then at some time, the truth will finally come out. And now my contact information, I can be reached at the Socialist Party USA in New York City at 339 Lafayette Street, 339 Lafayette Street, and number 303, New York, New York, 10012. And if anybody would like to write me, I will get, that's our national office, and it's also on New York Local. And I will certainly get any correspondence and try to answer any correspondence.
By the way, how is membership going with the SPUSA there in New York?
We're recruiting more and more people, not only in New York but throughout the country, as it is obvious that capitalism is an anti-life, inhuman system, and that any system where the stock market goes up because unemployment goes up because the people think that this means the Fed is going to continue to throw stimulus into the banks. There's something wrong with a system like that. We should be happy and expansive when more and more people are going back to work because those people are actually creating goods and services.
I really appreciate you coming back on. And Ruth Ann, she's incredible. She had alerted us to the situation of the extreme weather there in the Midwest, but we were still able to have the show on today. And Stephen, I'd like to thank you for joining the program. What was that, Ruth Ann?
I said, thank goodness. For a minute, we didn't know.
Yeah, thanks, Ruth,
for making this possible.
And we'll be looking forward to having our listeners to join us next week again on the Socialist Insight. Have a good night, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Ruth Ann.
Okay.
Bye-bye.